Hey, what's going on, Bucks fans? We are back with another edition of the Ike Bucks podcast. We've got a tremendous show for you guys today. My name is KJ Eichstead, and I'll be your host, and I'm here with Brian Weber. Brian, what's going on?
It's going well. It's good to be back. Talk some more Bucks. Here we go.
Let's do it. Okay, so yeah, Brian's been studying the Bucks for over 20 years. He always has a lot of good info for you guys. And if you haven't already, be sure to check us out on Twitter at @Ike_Bucks. That's @Ike_Bucks. You're going to find plenty of Bucks and Giannis content as well as the conversation surrounding it. So without further delay, let's get this thing rolling. All right, so it was a very big weekend for the Bucks. Very big wins that happened since our last show. The Bucks, they had a very big test going up against Philly, the 76ers, and there's also some drama surrounding that where Joel Embiid declared himself the best player in the world. And, you know, something about that, besides the obvious, just didn't really sit right with the NBA landscape. But the thing that made it unique is that he had a showdown with the real best player in the world, Giannis, a couple nights later. And Brian, how did that game go?
Obviously, for Joel Embiid, it did not turn out the way he thought it was going to turn out. And just based on his character profile as a person, Joel Embiid seems like he likes to take these hot takes pretty frequently to boost his own ego, maybe boost the hype around his name a little bit, because he is a great player. But I think we can all think on the eye test that he doesn't live up to the billing as the greatest player in the world, at least at this point, and I don't think so going forward either.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough because Joel Embiid, I've always liked him as a player in terms of, you know, everything about him as a player besides the fact that he's on the Bucks' biggest rival and he's like the centerpiece of the Bucks, you know, one of the Bucks' biggest rivals. I like his, you know, uniqueness. I like the fact that he's a center who's tremendously skilled. He's young. He hit the ground running. He overcame a lot of adversity with his injuries. He's, to be honest, he's pretty fun to watch, and he talks trash. He does back it up in most cases. This case against Giannis, he did not back it up. Giannis got the better of him. And Giannis is just kind of a little bit of the opposite going into what you said, Brian, about how Joel, he's done this before. You know, whether it's Hassan Whiteside, you know, other players in the league where he has talked some trash and he's asserted his dominance on him. He is an elite player. Like, there's no doubt Joel is an elite player, but it's all well and good to make a claim as long as you're not going at Giannis, because guess what? Giannis is going to get the last laugh. And I'm actually going to quick take a look at the stats to see how did Giannis fare against Joel in that game. So let's see. Looks like Giannis put up 36, 20 rebounds, and 6 assists. Joel Embiid, 19 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists, including 3 of 10 from three-point land as a center, and 6 for 26 from the floor. Who won the matchup, Brian?
Obviously, I'd say Giannis won that matchup, and it's kind of funny considering after the All-Star game when people were taking shots at Giannis, not being able to create his own shot or take many shots in the fourth quarter, that when they go to head-to-head in a meaningful game, Giannis triumphed once again, and Joel Embiid wasn't there for his team when they needed him most. And going forward for that team, I think with the injury concerns with Ben Simmons, the fragileness of their locker room, I think it's just a recipe disaster for them, not only for the regular season, but when it comes to the nitty-gritty time in the postseason. Whereas with the Bucks, they're out here jokingly doing WWE moves with the Washington Wizards mascot. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see where the team camaraderie part can overcome the issues like the Philadelphia 76ers have when it comes to their locker room.
I agree 100%. I think the Philadelphia 76ers, they had a tremendous core just a few seasons ago, but that core has become so distorted in these moves that they've made, whether it's getting rid of, you know, guys like Robert Covington, just a tremendous 3-and-D wing who's had some success around the league as a star in his role. Like, he's not a superstar, but he has been a star in his role. Like, Jimmy Butler, a great talent that I'm not sure any Bucks fan was, you know, thrilled to see him going to Philadelphia, but obviously the chemistry, the locker room, they clashed, and he's no longer there, so they say, oh, we'll sign Tobias Harris, you know, he'll be just as good. Well, I mean, the Bucks fans know, I think anyone who's watched the NBA over the last 10 years, Tobias Harris, He's not a max player. We tweeted this on Ike Bucks. He's a great player, but is he worth more money than Chris Middleton? The answer is a resounding no, and I agree with you, Brian, just before we move on. The chemistry issues will be the downfall of the Philadelphia 76ers. Brett Brown, it's looking like he's going to be a scapegoat. Elton Brand, let's be real, he shouldn't have really been a GM. You know, he's probably a smart guy, but he's not that level of executive, especially with all the assets that Philadelphia has at their disposal. Now, real quick question, you don't have to elaborate, but I just want to have a one-word answer from you. Going forward, if you're the Sixers, who are you building around, Embiid or Simmons?
Embiid for me.
Embiid for me as well. I think Simmons, his shooting is going to be a huge issue, but that's a whole other story. So let's actually move on to the game versus the Lakers, where this was actually quite a fun game because the Bucks prevailed in overtime. I think it might have been stressful, but that's what made it fun. The Bucks actually ended up winning 137 to 134 without Giannis down the stretch because he fouled out after playing only 25 minutes. Chris Middleton went off for 40 points. He was 8 for 8 from the line, 15 of 28 from the field, knocked down a few threes, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. The man was counting up. And Brian, what are your takeaways from this game?
It's just so impressive that after Bradley Beal followed up his first 50-point night with another one the next night, that Chris Middleton was able to walk into Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, and after missing 4 consecutive shots in the late fourth quarter and in overtime, he didn't bend. I mean, he bent a little bit, but he didn't break. And he said, you know what? Shoot or shoot. Kept shooting the ball, and sure enough, he scored 8 straight points for the Milwaukee Bucks, and he led us to a massive win on the road that kind of shows when Giannis Antetokounmpo isn't there, maybe sometimes because of fouling out or maybe some other extenuating circumstances, that Chris Middleton can just be the rock for this team. Because kind of like I said on last podcast, he's never been trigger shy. He loves to take those big shots, and that is something that you need in your DNA for a team that wants to win a championship.
You know, you're making me think of that interview where I think it was Bledsoe and Chris Middleton. We put that on Ike Bucks, but that was what Bledsoe said. He just said, hey, we want Chris to keep shooting. That's what Chris said about Bledsoe. He's like, we want Bledsoe to be taking those shots, and my teammates want me to be taking those shots. And that's just so telling about the culture that the Bucks have built here. And shout to Brandon Jennings for the culture. We saw you supporting the squad in Toronto. But the culture of this team and the message that was sent with this overtime victory on the road without Giannis, to me, just spoke to overcoming adversity. Because adversity, just like in life, just like on the basketball court, it comes in all shapes and sizes. You may think that adversity lurks in the form of the Los Angeles Lakers in the NBA Finals. You may think that adversity comes in the form of the refs or Giannis fouling out. Well, in reality, adversity can come from a red-hot Bradley Beal against the lowly Washington Wizards. So that's just something that stood out to me is the Bucks got this win. They experienced adversity. Obviously, Washington isn't a team that you're going to get up and get excited for. So naturally, there was a little bit of slippage from the team, but they ended up getting the job done, preserving their habit of winning and getting the job done.
And I also would like to take a little bit of time to shout out Eric Bledsoe, too, for in these past couple games, he has just been showing up in the box score all over the map. But not just that, his 3 ball is starting to fall. And that is just huge, especially in the second half of the season. I mean, going 4 of 6 against the Wizards for 23 points, but 4 of 6 from the 3-point line, like I said, 7 rebounds and 10 assists. I mean, that is crucial because, like I said, it was kind of the next man up mentality. When Giannis came out of the game, Middleton took over that number one role, but it was also kind of a 1-1.5 role because Bledsoe stepped up too in some massive moments. He was driving to the hole, getting some and ones, which he's become accustomed to. If you're a Bucks fan, you always see that in the games, but it's just been really helpful for the team, not just having Middleton, but Bledsoe as that blanket as well.
I agree. People like to talk about the supporting cast of the Bucks. You know, they may praise the supporting cast, but they may throw these backhanded compliments where, you know, hey, Chris isn't an all-star, Chris isn't a second star, you know, the Bucks don't have any help for Giannis. Well, Bledsoe and Middleton, they really showed up in that Wizards game. After the Wizards game, there was another tremendous test for the squad, and that came in the form of the defending champion Toronto Raptors on the road. This was not an easy matchup, and at times it looked like the Bucks were not going to win this game. It looked like Nick Nurse has figured out how to defend Giannis. It looked like the Raptors had the appropriate personnel to do so. They have a great GM in Masai Ujiri. They did not have Kawhi Leonard. They have a budding superstar in Pascal Siakam. A really good player in Kyle Lowry, even though we don't really like him in Milwaukee. But once again, Brian, the Bucks overcame adversity and put the clamps down to win and get their 50th win of the year. First team in the NBA to 50 wins. They shut up Drake, and they got another win. What do you think about the Raptors game?
Just being able to come in off the plane with a game the previous day, just having to go up into Toronto, probably the most hostile environment in the NBA.
Back-to-back.
It's a country. It's not just a city that likes the Toronto Raptors. What a lot of people like to forget is that they represent all of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the surrounding area of Toronto. It's all their provinces that are going to be supporting that squad. So the fact that they can just show up there, and when they do have a good defensive schematic in place for Giannis Antetokounmpo, once again, we go back to the supporting factors. Chris Middleton putting up 22 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 assists on 7 of 14 shooting. You got Eric Bledsoe putting up 17 points with 7 boards and 4 assists and a block and a steal. I mean, you can't ask much more. And it wasn't even just them two. The Brook Lopez's of the world step up. And even those not necessarily less impactful players, but players with less minutes like Marvin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
He gets in there, he gets us 9 crucial points with a huge, huge helpful outlook for this team going forward, because having these supporting pieces behind our main stars is going to be what's really influential in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing a lot less Ersan Ilyasova. He did not play due to coach's decision, so that might tell you something as we hone into these playoff matchups and start to build up that playoff rotation. You kind of started on it, but Marvin Williams, 9 points and 16 minutes off the bench. 3 for 6 from 3. Dante, 5 points, 7 boards, 3 assists. He's out there flying all over the court. One play that really sticks out to me is when he shake and baked past the guy, dribbled down the lane, did a jump throw in midair to Giannis in the corner, and Giannis knocked down the 3. It was one of the most beautiful plays I've seen the entire season. Then you have guys like George Hill giving you that steady dose of 9 points off the bench, 3 steals, 4 for 4 from the free throw line. He's just a super vet out there. Robin Lopez and Brook Lopez, solid performances, great performances on defense. Robin Lopez, you made that crucial block the other night. We actually forgot to mention that. Mm-hmm. But the Low Bros are playing amazing. So the Bucks, tremendous win on the road for their confidence. You know there was some butterflies, even though no one admitted it. There were some butterflies after losing to the Raptors last year in the manner that they did, of going on the road into an extremely hostile environment, like you were saying, falling behind by double digits,
mm-hmm.
and overcoming it to get a double-digit victory for their 50th win of the season. Like, you know, the Raptors circled this game on their calendar as well. So they're extremely well-coached, and the fact that the Bucks were able to overcome that adversity early on in the game when, to be honest, it didn't really look like they were going to win. They won. They shut up the haters. They shut up a lot of, Bucks haters, so-called Bucks analysts around the league, NBA analysts who don't think the Bucks are that great. The Bucks have been proving themselves time and time again that they were just the absolute class of not only the East, but also the NBA. That's no disrespect to the Lakers. They're on our schedule coming up. But the Bucks have proven themselves to pass every test that has come their way this season.
And it's touching on that point, it just shows the frustration that these other teams are having. Like with the Raptors, who are up by 10 or 11 points, whatever it was. Kyle Lowry getting that should have been flagrant foul in the fourth quarter on Dante DiVincenzo just kind of shows how a champion, an all-NBA player, can get so frustrated by just the littlest things.
Yeah.
Where he pretty much did an unnecessary slap on the face. But what does Dante do? He just gives him a quick little smirk, looks at him, he goes to the free throw line and hits his shots.
Yeah.
That just kind of shows the will of our team in comparison to others, because they have one mission this year, and that's to bring home that championship for Milwaukee.
That's what Fizdale said too. They asked him about Drake's antics, and did Giannis care that Drake was, trying to get in his head? And Fizdale responded with and saying, no, Giannis is focused on one thing, and that's an NBA championship. you know, what else can you say? The Bucks are a reflection of their leader. Everyone's focused. There's no Mr. Tough Guy here, DiVincenzo, trying to escalate a situation. He's just following Giannis's lead in terms of, hey, let me go get my points. That was a cheap shot. And a quick note here, NBA officials, if any of you are listening, let's try and give Giannis a little more respect on the call. He gets hit in the face all the time. Very rarely is it called. He's the MVP. He's probably going to win the second MVP in a row at a very young age. I think Bucks fans and just Giannis fans and just people who want to see the best possible product on the floor, it would be nice to have Giannis get at least a fair whistle. Now, he does get a lot of good calls, but certain times just make you scratch your head where it's like, how can the MVP not get that call? Do you have anything to add or should we just move on?
And we get it. It's home court advantage, obviously, for them. But like you said, those are the ticky-tack fouls where in the fourth quarter sometimes, yes, they'll get called blatantly out of nowhere sometimes. But in crucial games like that, when it comes to playoff time, you just hope it doesn't come down to a moment like that.
You hope.
You just got to cross your fingers and just hope for the best in those circumstances. So I think it was a good test for the team, though, as a whole.
Got to win in Toronto. Let's do it. Okay, so yeah, the league is taking notice. Not only analysts around the NBA, but even players. Like Jared Dudley is just a prime example. He's talking about the Bucks on his podcast despite being a Lakers player. Now, we know Jared Dudley played for the Bucks. We have a very favorable opinion of Jared Dudley. I think a lot of Bucks fans love Jared Dudley. Shout out to Jared Dudley for following Ike Bucks and, you know, keeping the communication going. No doubt that he's going to be a great coach someday. He's kind of winding down his career, but there are literally players on other teams, you know, discussing their arch rivals that they probably will meet in the finals this year. That's how much the Bucks are on the map now. You know, you look at today, like the various shows, whether it's First Things First, you know, they got people like Rick Bucher on there somehow, but they also have people like Nick Wright. A lot of people, whether it's Stephen A. Smith, whether it's Max Kellerman over at ESPN, people are talking about the Bucks. There's buzz about the Bucks like we have never seen before, and this team is talk of the NBA. Right now, the NBA does not know how to stop the Bucks. They have 20 wins to go until they get to 70. They have to go, I think it was something like 10-14 to match last season's win total of 60-22. That's absurd because you know they're not going to go 10-14. I remember going into the season when it was like, okay, will the Bucks win 56 games? Will they win 60 games again? And naturally, as a lifelong Bucks supporter, as somebody who's followed the team for like 20 years, I was a little skeptical. I was like, last year was such a fairy tale. Can we do this again? And I knew the Bucks were going to be great. I knew Giannis is the number one player in the world, and we have a great supporting cast around him. We have a great coach. But could this Milwaukee Bucks team that had such a dark age period for the entirety of, you know, a lot of the fans' lives, could they win 60 games again this year? Well, guess what? It doesn't look like they're going to win 60. It's looking like they're going to win 65-70. So let's ask real quick, 1 week later, yes or no, will the Bucks get to 70 wins?
I'm going to piggyback off last week's answer, and I'm going to say yes. I think this team will get 70 wins because we've dealt with some adversity with these first four games out of the break, and this team's looked really good. I'm really excited for what's going forward. And like you said, a lot of Bucks fans were hesitant to shoo us in for 60 wins again because any team having to follow that up, it's very difficult to do. But being the small market team we are, with the lack of success for the majority of these past 20 years that we've had, it's made people very tentative in saying, yeah, we're a 60, 65, 70 win team, because you're hesitant to say that about any team, even a returning champ.
Who wins that many games? Only the elite of the elite, right?
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. And we're lucky to say this Milwaukee Bucks team might be doing it back-to-back seasons.
Unbelievable. All right, well, that seems like a good spot to move on. Actually, real quick, I'm going to change my prediction from last week. I predicted that the Bucks would not win 70 games simply because, you know, load management, it's a tall task for anyone. But after these couple games coming out the All-Star break, I'm actually going to change my prediction. I believe the Bucks will go 20-4 and win 70 games just barely.
And kind of like what you were saying with the load management, our team is already being load management in a way because our guys are averaging 30 minutes a game. LeBron James, 36 minutes per game. All these other stars getting 35 to 40 minutes per game, whereas ours get 30 minutes where they're getting 5 to 7 more rests of off-court time, which When you play 82 games, do the math, that adds up to what, over 150 to 200 minutes?
Something like
that. That's insane. That's five to six games in itself. So that's something that adds up over the course of a season. And when you're being successful and when you're winning so many games by a wide margin, it just helps for the load management aspect of the game.
Absolutely. So let's move on. Let's just give a little bit of time to appreciate how well certain Bucks have played. And let's start with Chris Cash Money Middleton. Chris Middleton, everybody, since the All-Star break, has been playing 34 minutes a game, and he is scoring 31 points a game, averaging 7.3 rebounds, 3.3 assists, and guess what? He's shooting 59% from the field and 42% from three. This man came back from the All-Star break, and he's playing like not only an All-Star, he's playing like he could be a centerpiece somewhere on his own team because of his, you know, sheer moves, his mid-range game, his shooting ability from beyond the arc, his lack of fear, like you were talking about earlier. He's got the killer instinct. When you need a bucket in the fourth quarter, give the ball to Chris. He will get you one. What are your thoughts on Chris lately? He's been on a great run.
I mean, it's crazy. He's really putting himself into historical company because he's on pace to only be the fifth player ever to be a 20 points per game, a 50% from the field, a 40% from the three-point line, and a 90% from the charity stripe, joining the likes of Steph Curry, Dirk Nowitzki, and Larry Bird. And I forgot who the fourth man was, but after those first three names, they're all enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, those are very, very, very impressive numbers on very, very, very impressive efficiency. It's just crazy that the Bucks have had these guys, two of these guys do this back-to-back years. 50, 40, 90 in the golden era of NBA shooting?
It's kind of crazy to fathom. And averaging 21 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists on 30 minutes for the season, that's just a great supporting second player to Giannis.
Second star. It's a second star.
Regardless, like, that's just an incredible stat line to have, and he's just doing it in such an efficient manner. In big moments, with tough shots, with hands in the face, he just loves it. And it's just really cool to see, because having someone who can take those shots when the defense is already pressed up against him is just going to help in the playoffs, because mm-hmm. defense ramps up. So he's already used to those type of shots.
It's true. You know, we mentioned in the beginning how the Sixers threw a ton of money at Tobias Harris. And let's just take a moment to appreciate the fact that we did get Chris at, you know, it's an expensive deal, but it's definitely below the 190 he could have gotten. And we got this man for 5 more years. Giannis is going to sign a Supermax. Bledsoe's locked up for 5 more years. This Milwaukee Bucks core is not going anywhere. And Bucks fans can look forward to a lot of continued success. So speaking of Eric Bledsoe, how unbelievable is it that this man is shooting 50% from three since the All-Star break? It's unbelievable. He's averaging 18 points a game, 5 rebounds, and 8 assists in the 3 games since the break in only 29 minutes. And the play that sticks out in my mind is when he just dribbled the ball up the court, no hesitation, pulled up, swished a 3. The net didn't even move. What have you noticed about Bledsoe lately?
Just the confidence he's gaining in his shot in his game as his season's unwinded a little bit. Because I know first 20, 30 games or so, his stats weren't necessarily where a lot of Bucks fans wanted it to be. But it's awesome to see that he's ramping up that activity in terms of not just the box score, but his confidence, his defense. I mean, he was swarming Bradley Beal for those last couple possessions in the overtime. If you watch that game, it was just crazy. I mean, Bradley Beal, probably one of the more prolific scorers in our game today. Probably a top 5 scorer, if you ask many people. And Eric Bledsoe's all over the court, just pretty much stopping it from any shot being easy. And he was forcing Bradley Beal to pass to other guys like Rui Hachimura and other players that, kind of like in the Bucks situation, when Giannis is getting double-teamed, he's got to dish it to Middleton. But lucky in our circumstances, Cash Money can put a ball in the basket.
Oh, yeah. We actually put out a poll on Ike Bucks, and granted, it is a little biased because the majority of our followers are Bucks fans, but it was very simple, Bradley Beal or Chris Middleton. And last year, if you would have asked this, 2 years ago, if you would have asked this, I think the results overwhelmingly would have been Bradley Beal. But this year, I know what I'm voting, and I'm voting Cash Money. You know, Bradley Beal, he is a great player. He's young. He still has so long to play in this league, and he's a great player. You know, there's not much more you can say. But Chris Middleton, my gosh, this guy is, he checks almost every box for you.
And you have to think about the role that Chris Middleton has accepted.
Yep.
And if Bradley Beal would be able to accept that as well. Being an alpha dog like mentality, I don't think he'd be necessarily as good or as meant for that second role on the team of being a go-to guy. Whereas Cash Money, he also plays elite defense and usually the best offensive player on the team.
Yep.
Whereas Bradley Beal, he's a good defender, but sometimes I've seen him slack in that department a little bit. Yeah. So having Cash Money being that dual threat on the offense and defensive end of the basketball court is just very beneficial for the team.
Yeah, and kind of going back to that interview where just Bledsoe was there with Chris and they were just smiling. It was all smiles, this chemistry. Bledsoe is full of confidence, just like two guys that are twins on the team, Brooke and Robin Lopez, especially Robin Lopez. That guy has been playing amazing lately. Since the break, he's averaging 22 minutes, 10.7 points. That's Robin. Brooke is averaging 24 minutes. He's averaging 13.5 points. So the Bucks, from the low bros collectively, are getting over 24 points a game. And they're getting three-pointers. I mean, there was a bucket versus Toronto where it was a sequence when I think it was Brooke Lopez nailed a shot from the corner. You know, just they threw it to him in the corner. He took the shot. It was a center and far into the court, swishes it, walks back down the court. And then Robin Lopez had the exact same shot, whether it was just before, whether it was just after. And he nailed the exact same shot. I almost had to do like a double take because it looked like the exact same player. And these guys are literally twins with very, very, very similar skill sets. I mean, we mentioned Robin Lopez's epic block. I think that was Washington to really put the game into overtime. How about the Bucks centers right now? I mean, usually Giannis plays the five, but when Brook and Robin are out there, you know, they're playing amazing.
And it just goes from one to another in terms of their presence in the paint. I mean, it throws off the total offensive schematic for some teams because anyone who tries to go down there, regardless of your stature as a player, they're sending you away in the first, second, third, fourth quarter, overtime periods. They just seem to be pretty close to clones of each other, and it's nice to see Robin Lopez getting out of his comfort zone as well, trying to add that three ball to his regime of offensive abilities, because that's just going to make defenses more honest, which is going to spread the floor for all the other players that are on the court with him. And it's cool that he can play in the second unit, but now that he's getting some minutes with our first unit as well, that's going to help going forward in terms of the playoff.
I agree. It just gives Coach Bud more flexibility with whatever he thinks works best. So before we move on to the good Bucks, bad Bucks segment, we just want to take a little time to appreciate Marvin Williams slotting seamlessly into this rotation, fitting seamlessly into this locker room. You know, the chemistry has just been nothing but spectacular. Shout out to Marvin Williams, you know, just a vet coming in. He wants to win. He's bounced around the league the majority of his career. I think it's kind of interesting because the year the Bucks took Andrew Bogut number one overall, Bogut ended up leaving, obviously, after that catastrophic injury, you know, went and played for a few other teams. But he ended up getting his ring with the Warriors. Marvin Williams went number two in that draft. And now here Marvin finds himself on the Milwaukee Bucks with a shot at a ring. So I just want to say that I'm really impressed with Marvin, and he's been a great addition to the squad.
And he's just another one of those veterans where if our chemistry couldn't get any better, he's experienced, and he's very battle-tested in multiple different scenarios in the NBA and multiple teams he's been on. And even though he might not be showing up in the box score that much, it's not like his role for this team was to be a guy who gets you 12 points, exactly, 8 rebounds, 2 assists. He came onto this team to be a chemistry piece, come in when someone's not necessarily playing as well as they should be, and just kind of uplifting the team. And that's something you can't measure, because having players like that in the playoffs when their circumstances are going to get more pressure-packed, there's going to be a lot more controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Having someone like that to pick you up, that's been there, he's going to say, settle down, step back, you're here, live in the moment, that's going to be crucial going forward.
You know, you made me just think of comparing our addition last season in Nikola Mirotic to Marvin Williams this season. Now, if everything was removed and you just purely looked at it in a vacuum, you'd say, now, one of these guys is clearly a superior addition to the other. But as Bucks fans saw in the playoffs, Mirotic, he didn't really give two you-know-whats about playing defense, and he didn't really give two you-know-whats about the team. And frankly, Bucks fans were very happy to see him go. I remember we did a thank you Nikola Mirotic post, and it was received with, you know, quite a bit of backlash because it's always funny when that happens. But You know, people just didn't like the way he handled himself in Milwaukee. He was not a team first guy. He was not here to fit seamlessly in the rotation. He was a free agent who, you know, this became more and more obvious. He was there taking shots just to propel his own payday, and he ended up leaving the NBA and going back and playing in Spain. So it was just, here we gave up assets for Nikola Mirotic. You know, we did not surrender any assets for Marvin Williams. One of these guys looks, you know, very, very, very skilled in the surface. Another guy looks just kind of like a vet, who also is very skilled. But it just goes to show you how important chemistry is, how important attitude is to not only a unit, but just the overall success of a team.
And it's funny because, like you said, he had a way better statistical output in terms of the second half of the regular season for the Bucks when he was acquired. But no shot at Kevin Love here. He had kind of the Kevin Love syndrome when it came to playoff time. Mm-hmm. He just stuck up at the perimeter. He was throwing up ill-advised shots. And when it came to the defensive end, it seemed like he was completely lost out there.
Oh, he was. And he didn't care.
And it's kind of...
He broke our unit. Like, our lines were broken with Mirotić on the floor.
And it kind of catapults why he maybe went overseas to maybe refine his game and his mentality, because it really got worse as the playoffs went on, because he had a couple games where I think he was 0-4 or 0-5 from the field and he had no points. And coming into that acquisition, I think Bucks fans were expecting a 15-point guy.
That was what his numbers said.
Yeah, especially in playoff times. And having Marvin Williams instead, who might have half the points.
Double the impact.
He's going to be able to pick up people on the bench. He's not going to go all the way to the last chair, sit down, and just mope about things. Marvin Williams is going to be blessed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be able to feed to our other stars and just be catapulted into their roles.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah, I feel like there might have been something else I wanted to cover. Oh, yeah, you mentioned Kevin Love. To be honest, man, I've never been a big Kevin Love fan. I think he's always been overrated. He's always been, you know, he's really good at losing. He did get a ring with LeBron, but let's be real, that was LeBron and Kyrie. Kevin Love, I don't know. I mean, he's kind of a contract albatross. And, yeah, good luck to him going forward. He's, you know, I always thought he would be end up being more than he ended up being, but
yeah,
that's like, just kind of the way the cookie crumbles. And now, I mean, if he was on a lower deal, he would have value and he would be on a contender right now. But because he decided to sign that extension where he's making $30 million a year, he's pretty much, you know, he wrote that essay about being, you know, depressed or whatever, and that's very real. I'm not discounting what he says, but how different would Kevin Love, his attitude and his overall emotions be if he was on a winning team? And there are certain things that you have in your control, and signing yourself to an albatross contract that you know you cannot live up to. Now, obviously, it's understandable if you want to take the money. Like, if that contract was presented to me, I would sign it. But I didn't already have a max deal in my bank account like Kevin Love already did. He took the money. He didn't really, you know, consider winning as part of that equation. And then he comes out with, you know, some of these articles, and you feel for the man. It's a very delicate issue, but I think winning solves everything. And you're absolutely right, you know. Mirotić, Kevin Love, these guys in the playoffs aren't quite what they are cracked up to be in the regular season. So let's move on. Let's go to our good Bucks and bad Bucks segment. This is where we talk about something good for the Bucks, and then we also flip the script and we talk about something bad for the Bucks that they can improve upon, that they can do better, something that we notice. And this really could be about anything. So, Brian, I'm going to kick it to you to start. Tell me about some good Bucks.
One thing I really love about this team is we really portray the element of bend but never break. Because it's kind of crazy that we always take the best shots from teams, regardless if it's the Wizards, the Hornets, or if it's going to be the Lakers or the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to get someone's best, and the Bucks seem to thrive in those moments. I mean, I can think of Eric Bledsoe when the Bucks were down, I think it was 4 points to the Wizards. He was laughing at a timeout because he was happy to be a part of this team. He's like, I think we're okay.
It's a game.
And he realized that I think everyone in the arena were counting them out because Giannis Antetokounmpo was fouled out at this point. But Eric Bledsoe was like, we still got Cash. I still got myself. I still got the Lopez twins. We still got Dante. We still got George Hill. There was nothing to be worried about. And I think the Wizards prematurely were celebrating in that game. And then in overtime, they're like, wow, this is the real deal when it comes to the best of the best in the NBA, because Bradley Beal put up a career-high, 53 points that game? And yet again, it was another loss for them.
Just an L. You know, it, like, numbers are one thing. Winning is an entirely different thing. So I like that. You know, bend but never break. This Bucks team, they may bend. There may be quarters where Bucks fans may be frustrated, where it's hilarious because our bend is, like, up by 10. You know, our bend is not blowing out opponents by 25. Our big bend might be what we saw against the Raptors last night, where they're down double digits in the first half, or maybe what we saw against the Wizards, where they, you know, fight and claw to get it to overtime. But this team, this entire season, we have not broken in one crucial moment where we face adversity and we've actually crumbled beneath it. I remember the Kid era was just notorious for breaking when there was a bend. Like, any adversity whatsoever, the Bucks team would crumble. And I just want to say, thank heavens we are out of the Jason Kidd era. Thank the Lord.
Praise Budenholzer.
Praise Budenholzer. So something for me that I noticed about the good Bucks, I want to talk about Dante and Pat. Shout for Pat for always retweeting Night Bucks. We, you know, big fans of you over here. You know, looking forward to maybe seeing some clothing line come out in the future. But Dante and Pat, the Bucks, two notoriously athletic, for lack of a better term, you know, Caucasian white boys, that I'm going to call them. These guys just shatter the stereotypes. They're super fun to watch. They're leapers. These guys throw down high-flying dunks. They can knock down shots. And they're actually quite skilled as well. So these guys are, they're not quite the same player. They do have that elite athleticism. But, you know, I think Dante's a little bit better of a shooter. He might be a little bit better of a ball handler. Pat is really, really good at just being in the right place at the right time. I think they're, and, you know, finding those angles and making those cuts and just being on the same wavelength with Giannis. And Dante is getting much better at doing that. You know, these guys are just both, they're bringing aspects to the team, to the winning, to the success that, you know, I think every team would love to have a role player like Pat or Dante. And the good news is the Bucks have them on a combined, what, like $1 million, $2 million salary? It's just ridiculous the way John Horace has been able to put together this squad to have contributors not only on the offensive end but also on the defensive end at such a low cost, at such a low percentage of the overall cap. And that's one thing that I just really want to shine some light on, is how well Dante and Pat have contributed to our success this season.
And Dante DiVincenzo is just a breadwinner. I mean, like, mm-hmm. we were saying last podcast, he's a two-time champion at Villanova, but he also won two state championships in high school. So seeing how even-keeled he is in the NBA scene so soon in his career is just very, very promising going forward. And I think I'm speaking for all Bucks fans here, but he's turning into a fan favorite. I mean, even his name, Dante DiVincenzo, that is just such a unique name. It just comes off the tongue beautifully, and he just plays such a beautiful brand of basketball. He obviously isn't the primary focus yet, but I think he's going to turn into a huge weapon for this team. Who knows, maybe as soon as this playoff run, but next year I don't even want to go into what his leap could be after this season, which will be his full season, mm-hmm. how much of his improvements can go up as a whole. And it's just very cool to see, like you were saying, John Horace being able to make these acquisitions.
Yeah, I think it kind of reminds me about something you said last podcast, where you mentioned how much time Dante missed his rookie season, and that this is kind of still his rookie season. Like, he hasn't even gotten a full 82 under his belt yet, so this could be considered in a vacuum his rookie season. And just how mature, how well he's acclimating to the speed of the NBA game, I think you really got to credit his winning mentality, and also just the coaches he's had. Dante, he's been lucky. He's been very fortunate to have, I'm sure he had a great coach in high school. He had one of the best coaches in college with Jay Wright at Villanova. He's got a great coach in Mike Budenholzer, coach of the year, and he's being put in a position to succeed. Pat as well, you know, Dante DiVincenzo, these guys are, he's under contract for two more seasons after this season, including an option, I believe, for the year after that, so we have him for quite a while. Pat, I believe, is a free agent after this year. He's a guy that hopefully they can work something out, because Pat has certainly proven he can be part of a winning team. He's great for chemistry. He's definitely got some swag. He's got one of the coolest jackets out there with that custom deer emblem on the left side. So shout out to both those guys. Let's transition to bad Bucks. And we're not here to talk, you know, be negative about the Bucks. As you know, we like to keep it very, very positive. These are great times. We're in the golden age of Bucks basketball. everybody should just be enjoying the Bucks right now. However, we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we didn't look at the things objectively, and that means sometimes pointing out a negative or two. So, Brian, I'm going to start with you. What's some bad Bucks? Tell me some bad Bucks.
I think something that the team could improve on as a whole would be some of the fourth quarter lapses we've had, whereas coming out of the third quarter break, sometimes we like to surrender some of our leads, but it also goes back to that bend but never break mentality where we might get to the 5 points away where they're going to be coming up on passing us in the box score or the stats or the outlook of the game, but the Bucks are able to bounce back from it almost every time.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I would really like to see better from Giannis personally would maybe being able to be more dictative in the fourth quarter, because having cash money is a great fallback, but it seems like sometimes in the fourth quarter he gets a little bit timid with his shot, and sometimes he rushes some things. But I think if he just slows down his brain a little bit, slows down his mentality, he'll be able to overcome that. But that's something that's just going to come with time and repetition, so it's something that he can work upon personally. But as a whole, I think it's something that's a little bit to be worried about, but I don't think it's too important in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I hear you. I think the Bucks have had these tremendous third quarters, and naturally, you might, if you have an elite third quarter and you have a great fourth quarter, I mean, that would be considered a drop off. But if you know, the Bucks have been so good in their third quarters that they have been prone to what we might consider a fourth quarter lapse, and it just happens. You know, we don't break, we get the win. And, you know, those fourth quarter lapses, you would like to avoid them, but...
And with this team, you have to be picky, because there's so many positives. You have to be picky with those little meticulous things like that, where if you're watching these games very intuitively, with a keen eye, you'll be able to notice a couple of those 2-3 minute lapses where the team's like, I wish they could have played a lot better on a couple of these possessions. So I think it's good for the team to experience this now, because this is going to be helpful going forward for the playoffs, obviously. But like I said, it's just a little thing that they maybe need to work on going forward, but I'm pretty sure they're going to be able to overcome it this time around.
I think so, too. I think they learned a lot last year. So my bad Bucks, and I was really reaching. I was like, what am I going to talk about? Is there anything objectively negative I could talk about? And I had to dig deep for this one, but I'm going to go with these little, you know, sometimes these ticky-tack fouls, whether they are Giannis's fault, whether they're not Giannis's fault, but I'm going to say Giannis foul trouble. We saw in that Wizards game how when in the rare occasion when Giannis may have an off game, maybe, you know, we're so blessed that might even be an off game, but even when Giannis isn't available, when he does foul out, and I have a bad feeling that this might happen at some point in the playoffs, whether it's legitimate or whether the refs have something to do with it, you know, in terms of calling a wrong foul or a tic-tac foul, I have a feeling the NBA is going to test the Bucks in that sense, where they're going to intervene. And that's something that, you know, is really, what can you do to avoid it? I think you look at Coach Bud in the fact that he will defend his players fiercely on the sidelines. Going back to the contrast with Coach Kidd, you know, quote-unquote Coach Kidd, Kidd would literally just stand there. He would stand there on the sidelines. His players would be getting, you know, awful treatment from the officiating, and he wouldn't do a thing about it. I think his players wouldn't do a thing about it because of that. And the Bucks lost a lot of close games where you wonder if maybe Jason Kidd would have stood up for his players or stood up to the refs, that these 2-point deficits, these 4-point deficits that cost us a game might have been avoided. But here we have Coach Bud, who's able to advocate passionately for his players on the sidelines. I think Coach Bud looks the part in terms of he's got the beard, he's got the crazy red eyes where he's like, if he's pissed about something and he's going at the ref, you know, the ref will be like, okay, this guy's mad. He's mad. And the good news is that Coach Bud is the reigning coach of the year, so he definitely has some credibility when he does go after the refs. But the key here is that he actually does hold the refs accountable. If he's upset at a call, if he's flabbergasted by a call, he's going to let you know. He's going to give you, like, the craziest face of all faces that he can possibly conjure up as a coach. But the other part of this equation is Giannis is just going to have to be smart. I think we see all the time he's learning how to things where he may have made a mistake in the past, such as, you know, Drake in last year's Toronto series. Drake may have gotten in Giannis's head. Fast forward to this year when the Bucks go on the road and Drake was obviously trying to get in Giannis's head, and Giannis basically shut that down real quick. He's like, look, I'm coming into your city. I'm coming into your home court. I see your championship banner above me, and I'm going to get this win, and we're going to – the road to the championship is going to go through Milwaukee. But, you know, Giannis controls what he can control. I think he's going to learn to avoid these little tic-tac situations. It's not always in his control. A lot of times it's the officials kind of trying to leave their impact on the game, their imprint on the game, whatever you want to call it. But I think at the end of the day, between Giannis's IQ, Coach Bud's just overall being a great coach, this is something that we can overcome as well. So do you have any closing thoughts on that before we wrap things up?
And kind of like you said, like with Giannis being arguably the defensive player of the year.
Oh, he probably is. He should be.
That's exactly. That's what happens when you play real defense, is you're going to get some of those fouls because you're down there grinding. Whereas half the superstars in our league take those 10 minutes of the game off. They don't want to play on the defensive end of the court. Whereas Giannis, he takes pride and joy in it, so he might rack up those fouls on a given night more than the most common player because he's down there grinding. So I think that can also play into it a little bit as well. But hopefully, like you said, it doesn't come down to those ticky-tack ones in the big moments.
You'd like to hope. You'd like to hope. Hopefully the NBA doesn't do that to us. Okay, so that was some good Bucks, bad Bucks. And real quick before we wrap up the show, let's talk about what's to come. So the Bucks have a couple pretty good matchups on their schedule. Next, they have Oklahoma City, led by Chris Paul. So that is interesting because I saw somewhere, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but the Oklahoma City Thunder are actually like the second best team in the NBA since, I think it was January 1st or something like that, where the Bucks are number one, and OKC has just been rolling for a couple weeks now, where you can't sleep on this team. Like, I don't think they're going to be a problem in the playoffs. Luckily, they're in the West. We don't have to face them as like a, you know, 1-8, 1-7 potential series that could give you a lot of issues. But in terms of just an average game, which is this Friday on ESPN at 7 p.m. versus OKC, the Bucks cannot overlook this team. You know, Chris Paul, he's found a great fit in OKC, and he's leading his squad, and they're probably overperforming right now, but they're getting results. So any thoughts on that game?
Yeah, like you said, Chris Paul coming into OKC has done wonders for that squad. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think he just needed a little bit of a mentor.
Yeah.
And Chris Paul has been perfect for him in terms of his growth as a player, because I believe Shai Gilgeous is averaging about 20 points at this point in the season. And
he looks good.
That's a really good number for him, and he's going to be a promising player go forward. But they also have Dennis Schroeder. They have Steven Adams.
Core guys.
They got some good players, and they're well coached, so they're going to be a tough matchup for sure, especially going across into the Western Conference. It would be a good test with a team we don't see often.
You know, I'm just really excited for OKC because, yes, things didn't work out with the big three of Durant and Harden and Westbrook, but I think if you break it down, each one of those players has their fundamental flaws. Like KD, superbly talented, but, you know, there's no doubt he's kind of got some mental
they're not the best role models.
I mean, James Harden, like, I wouldn't want to play with him. I don't think any other player in the NBA would openly admit they want to play with him. He's not that fun to play with. He basically is a ball hog. And then you look at Russell Westbrook, who, man, this guy loves winning. Like, he cares about winning, but his style is kind of destructive as well, where he's got a high usage rate. He can't really shoot that well, and that big three didn't really ever mesh to win a championship. Like, they were great friends. They were all young. They were all promising. They had a lot of similarities. But in terms of their games, as we've seen these players blossom in different locations as the years went on, it never really looked like it could probably have worked there. And what I'm getting at is how excited I am for the future of the Thunder with the treasure trove of draft picks in their coffers. You know, I mean, this team is going to be great. You know, they're setting themselves up real nice.
They've done wonders for themselves with those draft picks. And like you were saying with Russell Westbrook, he wasn't necessarily the best role model for a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And mm-hmm. like you said with Kevin Durant, those are guys who are more in the primes of their career. They're more focused about their own initiatives, whereas they don't really want to pass any of the skill sets onto maybe someone on their own team, because that all put them at the potential of not being the best player anymore. And that's something that in their mind is still resonating.
Yeah.
Very much so, because Russell's got a lot left to offer, and we'll see how Kevin Durant is coming off this Achilles injury.
I got a prediction. I don't think the Nets are going to be any good. But, hey, we'll say that. Okay, then the Bucks take on Charlotte, you know, automatic win. That's a Sunday noon start, so the only thing you worry about there is like a
you know, Bucks sleeping in, missing the bus, something like that. I think we'll be able to sleepwalk our way through that game. It might not be the most entertaining, but
Marvin gets to go home.
Don't worry, we'll be there on Ike Bucks for you at noon on Sunday. So if you're just waking up after a fun night out, that'll be fun. Then is another test Monday at 6:30 on NBA TV. The Bucks take on Miami Heat in Philadelphia, and Stephen A. Smith thought it was real funny to mention how he thinks the Heat could potentially give the Bucks problems. So let's play that clip real quick. I know I put it on Ike Bucks earlier today, but Stephen A. Smith is just grasping at straws trying to make a case for the Miami Heat here. This is kind of entertaining.
When I look at the Milwaukee Bucks, clearly the creme de la creme of the Eastern Conference this year, how do you beat them? I think the team that comes to my mind is the Miami Heat. When I look at the Miami Heat, clearly size is a factor, and I understand that. The thing is, the Miami Heat is the second-ranked three-point shooting team in the NBA. They beat Milwaukee in the one matchup that they had against them this year, albeit it was just the second game of the season, and it was even without Jimmy Butler. But when I look at when I watched the game last night against Toronto, you got Toronto miniature guys, Kyle Lowry, Van Vliet, and those guys, okay? It's difficult to shoot over these guys. They come out, they send taller guys out on the wing, and then if you drive into the teeth of their defense, they got a bunch of trees waiting for you in Milwaukee. How do you offset that? By having bigger dudes who can shoot perimeter shots. And that is what Miami has. In Butler, in Duncan Robinson, in Tyler Hero. I know Kendrick Nunn is, you know, he doesn't have that kind of size, but I like him a lot. Ben Adebayo, this brother is big time in the open court as well. They've got athletes, they've got thoroughbreds, they got guys that can play above the rim, they got guys that shoot from the damn parking lot. This is who Miami is, and I think that's the one ingredient ultimately humble the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, long story short is Stephen A. Smith is basically like, hey, no other team can beat the Bucks, but I got to talk about something, so I might as well say the Heat could humble the Bucks is the word he used. Well, that's probably not going to happen. Nonetheless, it puts eyes on this matchup. It puts significance on this matchup as like a, you know, regular season storyline. So the Bucks are going to go into Miami, and they're going to take on the Heat. Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, hometown kid. Should be a good one to watch. We're going to be on Ike Bucks for you there. Make sure to follow along. Predictions for that one? Win, loss? It's on the road?
I think it's going to be another win for the Bucks, but it's going to be fun to see us playing the team hopefully at full health, as well as with the new acquisitions with Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder, who have been, everyone says, going to be kind of the changing of the guard in terms of them being the biggest potential threat to us. But so far, I don't think it's been much of a needle mover for that team. And kind of switching topics quick, back to the Stephen A. Smith hot take. That is something he's not unfamiliar with, taking those stances against teams that are truly great. He just likes to kind of go off tangent on some things that don't even really apply to a reason to why they could beat the team.
Well, he was like adamantly defending James Harden earlier. It's like, look, Stephen A., Harden is what he is. He's not a winning player. He's a stats guy.
Exactly.
But we don't have to get in. We could talk for days about that. Then you take on Malcolm Brogdon and the Pacers again. We'll see if Malcolm actually plays. But the Pacers are a solid team, just like Miami. I think they're probably in that, you know, definitely a tier down from the Philadelphia 76ers, the Raptors, and even the Celtics. I think that'll be a win. That's at home. That's a 6 p.m. ESPN start time.
Nice revenge game.
Nice revenge game, exactly. And then the game that everybody has circled on their calendar, Friday, March 6th. Bucks fans, get excited. In Los Angeles, your Milwaukee Bucks will be taking on LeBron, Anthony Davis, Jared Dudley, and your Los Angeles Lakers, coached by Frank Vogel and former Bucks coach Jason Kidd. We all know what happened last time. It was an epic victory in Milwaukee. But this time, it's on the Los Angeles Lakers' home turf. It's in the Staples Center. That place is going to be rocking. A matchup versus MVP candidate 1 and MVP candidate 2 in LeBron. Wow. I mean, where do you even start? Like, what do you think about that game?
It's not even just MVP 1 and MVP 2. It's Team 1 and Team 2.
Team 1 and Team 2, hands down.
It is a legitimate, hopeful finals preview for our Bucks team. Because we all assume we're going to get there, obviously. But LeBron's coming off some really good basketball, just had a 40-point night with his first matchup against Zion Williamson, overcoming the rookie sensation. But this is just going to be one of those tests where when you get to go to the Western Conference teams, the teams you only get to see once or twice a year, get to go in a hostile territory. It's going to be also the first time Giannis has played there since the passing of Kobe, which is all very tragic, obviously. But it's going to be a very emotional game because Kobe left a massive impact not only on LeBron, but Giannis Antetokounmpo, obviously. So they're both kind of playing with that extra incentive to reach that final goal. So it's going to be kind of cool to see them battle it out for the first time post that.
You know, I mean, none of us really know for sure, but I think there's a good chance that Kobe will be looking down on this game and just watching.
He's circling that one on his calendar.
Kobe up there is circling that game on his calendar. So that's a great place to wrap up here. You know, we could talk Bucks all day, but it's got to end sometime. And we just want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Brian for coming on. And we just want to say, make sure you follow Ike Bucks on Twitter. Always have the latest in the Bucks, the latest with Giannis, giving it right to your feeds, you know, formatted great. And just really anything you need to know about this team, you're going to find it on Ike Bucks. And not only that, but we're actually giving away two Kobe cards. We're going to ship them to, you know, two random people who comment on the Welcome to Ike tweet that we're giving away Kobe cards just to honor Kobe Bryant. It's something small. Kobe was a big inspiration to us. He's a big inspiration to people everywhere. And we just want to give back a little bit to honor him. So you'll find that on Welcome to Ike on Twitter. Once again, you know, check out Ike Bucks. And we want to thank everyone for following. Until next time, Bucks fans, we out.